they won't be able to pay it. The money won't be there. It's a form of accounting fraud, which, again, I think you probably had the same frustrations with that I've had for decades trying to get economists to understand that just because a company says it's made 20 bazillion bucks doesn't mean it's made 20 bazillion bucks. That's how you run a fraud scheme. That's how we sent hundreds of CEOs successfully to prison with the best criminal defense lawyers in the world in the savings and loan debacle.
Welcome to the Deep Focus Show. I'm your host, Richard Wolff. I'll be your guest host for this month. Let me begin by thanking Professor William K. Black, who has joined us today. Thank you very much for your time and your expertise. I want to remind you all, please, to like, subscribe. You know the drill by now. It's a way to extend the reach of this program and to bring ever more people into the kinds of in-depth conversations that we have here. Professor Black is a distinguished scholar in residence for financial regulation at the University of Minnesota Law School. He's also the author of a variety of pieces of work that are particularly focused on financial crime and everything having to do with that, which pretty much reduces to everything. Okay, let's begin if we can. I want to start by asking you about the issue of cryptocurrency. And the reason I bring it up, besides all the obvious ones, is that one of the questions that's been raised about cryptocurrency is that while it appeals to libertarians of all kinds as a way of having money without the government's control, that somehow that liberates everybody. And then the question arises, yeah, but does it also make it easier for those who want to criminally abuse this system to do so? What's your take on that?
Well, the answer to the second question is yes. And that's precisely the attraction. So it is very common when people blackmail through denial of service attacks on computer systems, like Canvas, for those of us who are academics, right? Canvas has just been attacked and apparently paid ransom. Those are almost always paid in crypto because it facilitates the fraud scheme. There are different kinds of crypto, and there are different types of fintech. Some of them use similar coding systems, but are not currency-based. But essentially, all of them are either scams or add nothing to life other than, of course, if you're a criminal, don't want your fraud proceeds traced or your corruption proceeds traced.
How is the cryptocurrency business coping with this? Given what you just said, why is cryptocurrency even still here?
Because the people that run the crypto are the crooks. they have no problem with it. In the vernacular, these things are the most typical thing is called a rug pull. If you follow the news, the folks who are listening, you may well have heard about the one involving President Milei of Argentina and his wife. It's actually the second rug pull that they've pulled. And with a rug pull, you claim you're going to issue a large number of crypto assets. You issue only a relatively small number. And this causes an uptick, sometimes a substantial uptick. And this uptick may only last a minute, but you're already programmed in to dump after you've caused the because this stuff is very thin. Small volumes of purchases can cause massive surges. And then the rug pull part, of course, is you take your money run, and you leave everybody else with the losses. Now, occasionally, a very few people are fast enough to actually win a little bit of money. And so they all tell these stories to each other on the web. And so you have 10,000, and you know, that's 10,000 to 200,000 are sort of accurate types of numbers, representative types of numbers. They're all hoping to win something that maybe three people will win. So it, overwhelmingly, you simply get wiped out in a rug pull.
All right. Let me back up as a layperson here. Why all the hoopla? Given what you've just said, why is cryptocurrency this magical phenomena? Why is it spreading? Why are there more and more types of it? Why are there, if this is indeed true, more and more companies and or banks and or countries accepting it or allowing it?
Okay, so the story's changed over time. You probably remember the period when if you added blockchain to your name, right, your stock soared.
Yeah,
remember that?
Right.
And a company, in fact, changed its name to blockchain and had like a 10x on the stock. So people invest, I don't mean in money, invest in hopes and dreams,
yes,
right, of getting rich quick.
Right.
And everybody's heard a story. And the way the algorithms work, if you start hearing that story and click, you will get thousands of supposed success stories and thousands of people pitching you. So just as in old time scams, if people could get mailing lists of people in their 80s who had a fair bit of money, that was the ideal population for doing a whole series of scams, typically using the phones. This, you're self-selecting to show, in plain English, you're a moron. You're a mark, right? And so this is very valuable to folks. They like these lists and they keep hitting them up. You will have noticed young males in particular are not the same as we were. We look to be sort of generational. And so they grew up with hearing that this was magic. And Bitcoins have had substantial periods of very substantial appreciation.
Right.
There were periods, this is why I say there are many different kinds of fintech and crypto. When, do you remember the baboon pictures? These were the sketches that the equivalent of AI simply varied slightly. Right. And so it could produce 100,000 of them for essentially nothing. And there was a period when it first comes out where the Hollywood A-listers were doing these and having exclusive parties, and you could only come if you had had one of these apes and such. And so you folks may also recall that when they were doing the child of two Stanford law profs, right, one of whom's area of expertise is ethics and the other is fintech.
Yeah.
Those folks went out. Who did they hire? They hired Tom Brady and people like that, right? And these are the cool folks. And they all said nice things because they were paid to say nice things. And that works for a lot of people as well. Somebody gets in and sells at the right time and actually does make $80,000. And the rest of their life, they're not going to make $80,000, at least present value, $80,000, their whole stream of future earnings. So when they tell that story, it's way cool. The rest of the folks, the promoters, for folks like us, we look at them and we go, this is an obvious fraud. These people are stupid. These people think we're stupid. But some of them are quite effective, and they do the usual young man thing. They have photos not only of Tom Brady and such, but they have photos of beautiful women and high-powered cars, and they're smoking expensive cigars. And, you know, it's that testosterone thing that they don't really have, but they really wish they have. You may recall there was a period when many of us were susceptible to at least aspects of this. The other major change that's occurred over the last 15 years is the incredible spread of gambling in video games. And it's not called gambling, but it's effectively gambling, and Meta and places like that know exactly what it is. So one of the things that came out of the recent trial is that Meta knew that something like 17% of its revenues were coming from frauds. And you could do one of two things. You could try to prevent the frauds, or you could say, that's great. How can we make it 20? And hint, Meta did more of the second and a whole lot less of the first.
All right. Is this, in your mind, because you study this, is this just a kind of, how shall I put it, endless progression of human gullibility that, you know, scams were one kind 50 years ago, then they were of a different kind 20 years ago, and now crypto and gambling and whatever its euphemisms, it's just the latest incarnation of the same thing?
I wouldn't say that for two reasons. One, it's supercharged. It's like, you know, comparing a jalopy with no engine that you pushed to something that is all over the world, even in very poor places. These days, it's ubiquitous. Second, again, they're different things. And so there's a different story for each kind. So the story on stable coins, of course, is what it sounds like. Hey, this is stable. It's sort of the new gold. It maybe won't appreciate on the upside in inflationary times like gold often has and such, but you'll be safe. But that's always at war with yield, because they're always sitting on a chunk, a big chunk of money. And when you sit on a big chunk of money and you're not a bank, you go, hey, banks make a ton of money on the float. Banks have to pay brick and mortar expenses. Banks have to pay for deposit insurance, for regulators. I don't have to do any of those things. I'm smarter than any banker I've ever met. And so they think they'll make an absolute killing, that they have immense competitive advantage over other folks. And they think other folks are morons because they were a junior bank employee and they were jerk males, you know, young jerky males. And they thought they were smarter than everybody. And then, you know, Bankman-Fried finds out he's actually a moron. Yeah. I don't know if I urge everyone to look on, you know, YouTube or something like that for when he was asked, hey, this sounds a lot like a Ponzi scheme. And his answer is, in substance, yes, it's a Ponzi scheme. I mean, this is way into it. He'd been working on his pitch for years. He, you know, he had high test scores and such, but he just came across as someone so financially illiterate that you couldn't believe anyone got past 3 minutes of a discussion with him without going, bye. Now, the other thing with stable coins, what I was talking about with yield is, well, okay, let's throw in some other things that are not so stable, but have a higher nominal yield. And so when stable coins were used before, they collapsed, and they collapsed within 3 months. But they lied about it and covered it up with the good old-fashioned way, which is grow, 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 and get phony accounting opinions.
Right.
Right. And that's my background, is fighting that as a financial regulator back in the savings and loan days. So it's just like seeing all your old tropes brought in again as if they're genius. And you're going, that's just a fraud scheme I dealt with 30 years ago.
And the amazing thing is it keeps being presented as though it were new or new and different. And you can't, people like me, I do a lot of history. We've seen this movie. We've seen this movie, you know, a Ponzi scheme. That's very old. That's been around for hundreds of years. To take in new money, pay off the old money, keep the illusion going, and meanwhile rake off, you know. We all studied Mr. Madoff, who did this in the billions, you know. There's no limit. Once you can get the right audience to make the story too and figure out how to feed them enough information to keep them in the game, then you can play.
Yes. Yeah, so some of this is path dependent in jargon. But I think you'll like it. You may already have heard it, but have you heard the phrase HODL?
No.
Okay.
Please tell us all. Yes.
So the art, of course, when you're dealing with this, is to keep people from dumping Bitcoin, for example, when it's falling, and keep them also from selling when they win. Right. Either way, it sells very bad for Bitcoin. So one guy was, you know, and it's the modern era. So they're all on electronic message boardish type things to each other. And it's a community. And that's important in terms of psychology. And so a guy said, you need to hold, not sell. But he transposes. So it comes out HODL instead of hold. So nowadays they wear T-shirts and caps with HODL, and they developed it as if it were an acronym, and now it stands for Hold On for Dear Life.
Well, you know, so Madoff needed a community too. He circulated in a rich New York City kind of circle, and he made sure to let everybody know what spectacular returns he got, so that, and on.
No, can I do my please. Criminology hat?
Please.
That's actually not how he did it. And that's why it lasted so long. So a Ponzi scheme, as you know, and probably almost all listeners know, typically pays a very high rate of interest. A minimum of 50% is typical, and sometimes allegedly 100%. And so the mathematics kill Ponzi schemes relatively quickly compared to other fraud schemes. Madoff did two really different things. One is he made it hard to invest with him, right? That's very clever. You had to get an introduction. And typically in America, there's actually a second scheme, if we have time, in Europe. But in America, you had to get an introduction, and the introduction had essentially to be from a relatively prominent Jewish people, right? And they knew, he let it be known that one of the people investing with him was the living saint, who's, left us since, but, who had pursued the Shoah criminals. And no Jew would ever rip off the living saint, right? So by making it hard to get into the deal, it made it seem much, much safer. But also he paid a much lower interest rate. He paid basically more like 500 basis points above a real yield, that's 5% for you know, non-finance folks. And that's considerable if you're investing hundreds of millions of dollars. Right. But it's not insane, right? It worked out in that era to be roughly a 12% return. And that happens. 12% returns happen, right? So they didn't seem as suspicious. Plus, math-wise, they don't burn out through the compounding of interest anywhere near as quickly. Now, it was still way too good to be true. And he had, as I said, a second ring. And this other ring was not where he was going after what we call affinity fraud.
Right.
Of fellow Jews. And the idea of affinity fraud, of course, is the hard part is getting you to trust me. And if we have something in common, we're more likely to trust and listen. And he preyed on Jews deliberately. But his second ring was actually these super aristocrats in Europe. And this one people don't know about hardly at all. These are literally the descendants of the folks on the Arc de Triomphe names, the marshals, in other words, the top military leaders of France during Bonaparte days, type of thing. And he had a top, very sophisticated, very friendly guy who organized the rest of these barons. But he was kind of in on it, so he got an extra special yield.
Yeah.
Anyway, he commits suicide at his desk when this break.
When it got caught.
When it broke, yeah. So he was like this super duper upper crust French guy that would be, you know, you would desperately try to get to your parties at the salon type of thing. And so he was able to bring in through his circle of very rich, very elites, about a third, I think, of the money. And so that supercharged the ability, again, to continue the Ponzi scheme. He continued this Ponzi scheme for 20 plus years.
Yeah.
And he started out with a real reputation. He had been head, of the exchange. And back, you know, it's a weird esoteric thing I won't try to explain, but stocks used to be priced in 16ths, I think it was. And that created some weird spread opportunities. And that was his one good idea before he started scamming people. And he actually became a millionaire off of, or as economists would say it, reducing market imperfections.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Which so conveniently keep arising. Yes. Tell me, have you followed enough to give us an insight into what exactly President Trump and his family are doing with cryptocurrencies?
Well, certainly not exactly, because they're obviously keeping it somewhat secret, but you're raising exactly the right point. It's a tell, in the sense of the poker use of the word tell, that they're screaming the quiet part out loud. They have gotten to the advertising stage, the free advertising. They want people to know that they're on the take. And they want to set a minimum bar to ratchet it up. And so if they may even be exaggerating their take in the hopes that the next guy, the next Saudi princeling, will pay even more. And it's a package deal. They don't simply offer crypto. They offer pardons. They offer investments. Back when I was a savings and loan regulator, Charles Keating was the most notorious of the fraudster. He was my, 15 minutes of fame, because he put in writing, highest priority, get black, kill him dead, type of thing. We had Keating dead to rights on a hotel that was massively overvalued. he sold a 50% interest in it to the Kuwaiti investment fund within about 20 days. And the law firm that did the work began emergency research on the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. What's the first thing that Trump got rid of enforcement as president? The Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Plus, he can now pardon as well. So he's learned the lesson from the first term and has now supercharged it. Here's the thing to look for that could push this into insane levels. He wants to create a sovereign wealth fund because sovereign wealth funds are, with the possible sole exception of Sweden, notoriously corrupt. This is the son-in-law, you know, got the billions already at the beginning of all of this. He could have the sovereign wealth fund, because he's changed the rules, purchase crypto. Tens of billions of dollars of crypto. Imagine what would happen to crypto prices. And then he could say, you know, we should revalue this for purposes of figuring the budget deficit at market. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm sure he's going to have sleazy enough advisors that as the if and when the economy really is crashing, and personally, I think it is, this may be the break glass in case of emergency.
Is there a way that crypto, or is that what you're saying to me, that crypto is a mechanism whereby they can not pay the national debt and get away with it?
No, they'll pay. Well, they won't be able to pay it. The money won't be there. It's a form of accounting fraud, which, again, I think you've probably had the same frustrations with that I've had for decades trying to get economists to understand that just because a company says it's made 20 bazillion bucks doesn't mean it's made 20 bazillion bucks. That's how you run a fraud scheme. That's how we sent hundreds of CEOs successfully to prison with the best criminal defense lawyers in the world in the savings and loan debacle.
You know, I've always wondered, there's a statistic that says something around 20% of American corporations are what we call zombie corporations. That is, if you count the interest and amortization obligations they have, they're not functioning. They are bankrupt. They are not generating the income to cover their costs. They persist for years. How do you do that?
Ah, you come to the right person. Okay, so this is the thing that we discovered by autopsying every savings and loan failure. And what we discovered is the strategy that optimizes looting by the CEO. And this isn't just us. These folks that I'm sure you've heard of, George Akerlof and Paul Romer, right?
Yes.
Two Nobel laureates came to our offices as regulators, financial regulators, and we gave them access to our stuff, and they had independently come to the conclusion that there was likely looting, and that was our conclusion. And we explained to them how the accounting works and why accounting control fraud, as I call it, is a sure thing. You will definitely report off the charts earnings, and you will have no difficulty getting a clean opinion from a top-tier audit firm. And you can then repackage the stuff. This is the great financial crisis, with what the industry calls liar's loans. Think about that. Where the industry's own anti-fraud experts say that the fraud incidence in liar's loans is 90%, where it is the CEO that incentivizes the loan brokers to put the lies in liar's loans to make them look safer by inflating the income. The brokers also extort the appraisers to inflate the appraisals. So again, they look like better assets. And then after many intermediate steps, you create the grandpappy of all catastrophes, the credit default swap and the CDO, which is a collateralized debt obligations. Now that these things to be sold effectively, virtually all of the jargon is tranches, the components had to have a AAA rating, which is the highest possible. Not a single one of these would have honestly made the standards of a single C, which is the lowest possible rating. In every single case, they got a AAA rating. And there is, remember the fiscal cliff at 100% of debt? If you borrow another money, dollar as a government, your economy collapses and such. And you remember the grad student at UMass?
Yes,
who looked at their work and found the glaring just mathematical mistakes and data entry mistakes that falsified completely this? He's got an article out where he looks at the great financial crisis and what actually caused what volume of dollar losses. And it's almost exactly 3/4 of the total mortgage losses are due to liar's loans, which are frauds led by the CEOs, which is just what Akerlof and Romer, two Nobel laureates, I would emphasize, come to our offices, look at our work, write an article looting the economic underworld of bankruptcy for profit, completely endorsing our findings and their independent work. And when the great financial crisis comes, not a single conventional economist will talk about this. And who's his wife?
Yes, yes, yes. Just so you know, when I was a graduate student in economics getting my PhD at Yale University. And it was almost all males. Very few women did that, as I'm sure you know. So if there was a woman in the class, we all knew it because there were very few of them. My classmate was Janet Yellen. Anyway, I want to go back. Go ahead.
They're friends, by the way.
Yes, yes.
My wife went to Yale as well and was one of the first women allowed into Princeton and such.
Yes, yes. In the old days, when the good old days were here and women were excluded, that's right. Unbelievable how that was. Anyway, I want to draw you out one more step on this. If I've heard you right, if, for example, a CEO is in a position to persuade or extort the accountant, the lawyers, the people, the credit agencies that monitor all of this, so you can get a lousy loan or a bad stock and have it rated AAA and have all the bells and whistles lined up. If it happened as often as you clearly suggest it did, then we must assume that it's happening now, that it's part of what you fear to be the coming crash.
Absolutely. And there's actually no question but that it did happen. Again, it's the industry's own anti-fraud experts, not us, the industry's own anti-fraud experts, who said the incidence of fraud in liar's loans was 90%. people don't know about the heroes of the great financial crisis. The loan brokers also extorted the appraisers to inflate the appraisals. And it's simple, right? You either come back, they tell you the number you have to hit. You either come back with the home value at least that high, or they fire you.
Right.
Don't
get somebody who will do it.
Don't pay you and blacklist you.
Right.
From all future work.
Right.
So none of this requires a formal, I'm also have, you know, a law degree and was practicing lawyer for years. None of this requires a conspiracy as the law defines conspiracy and as economists think of conspiracy. I never have to say the words. I simply signal, this is signaling theory, right? What I want done. And so the credit rating agencies knew that if they didn't get a AAA, the deal wouldn't make.
That's right.
If the deal doesn't make, because you didn't give them the rating, they fire you for future business. And this, and that, and all three of the big credit rating agencies went to premium billing on credit default swaps. So their income goes like this, just absolutely spikes. And each of them can rationalize, if I do the right thing, nothing will change except I'll be a lot poorer. And, you know, my kid's going to school, type of thing. And so we know exactly how many caved, 100%. Not a single deal was rejected due to failure to get a AAA on any of these CDO tranches, as the jargon goes. Not one.
So is the following sentence correct? This is a recurring problem that is recurringly known to the profession, which it has done cosmetic things to make a little bit more difficult or something, but has done nothing to stop it from continuing to be a characteristic of the financial system. Is that true?
Right. I wouldn't even say that they've discouraged it. I would say that they refuse to make any meaningful reforms. Right. This was the golden goose. Nobody was going to strangle the golden goose. Similarly, you never had to order the appraiser to inflate, nor did you have to order the loan broker to extort the appraiser.
Right.
You just don't get your fee unless the loan's approved.
Right.
And the loan has to have the appraisal, and it has to have the adequate income, even though the income is inflated. So let me tell you, it's in court a number of times as a, you know, testifying pro bono for some of the minnows as defendants. The government would make its prosecution case by putting on the loan underwriter, right? Oh, well, we, you know, do this and we do that. And so what the loan underwriters in every case that I saw in court testified was they would call up the employer and verify the employment. So that means the person on the corporation has pulled up on the video screen your file, right? And is verifying, yes, they started work on this date and they continue to work. Your income's on the same page. It would literally take 3 seconds to verify the borrower's income, but it would blow up the fraud scheme. So they instructed their personnel not to ask what the real income was. Well, plausible deniability, of course, is the magic phrase.
All right, now I'm going to ask you a politically loaded question, because we don't have much time, and this is the big one. Given everything you've learned in your life with your knowledge of the law and your knowledge of finance and all of that, is it fair to conclude that the capitalist system that we live under has generated a financial dimension or a financial sector that is literally out of control?
Oh, it's massively fraudulent. It's run by the most elite CEOs. And here's how bad the profession is. Who got named the CEO of the century? Jack Welch. Who was the father of manipulating earnings so that you always made the number, the projected earnings number, so that your stock would rise? And who left a desiccated hulk that had to be bailed? People forget this. Had to be bailed out in the great financial crisis because Jack Welch was not really running an engineering company. 60% of their purported revenues came from finance.
Yes, I remember noticing even in their annual reports, you could see that General GE's credit corporation was the moneymaker for them. Yeah, extraordinary.
Well, but it wasn't. It was the accounting scam
that lay behind.
They were losing money so badly that they had to be bailed out by the federal government, and they would have taken down the entire financial system but for that bailout, which gets us into, you know, too big to fail and that pathology, where essentially we're extorted, where every major bank CEO's goal is to get at least $100 billion in assets so that they'll have effective immunity and ensure that they'll be bailed out.
And then we get the Signature Bank, and then we get all of the wonderful. Look, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We have, however, run out of time. Thank you very much for joining me and giving us your insight as a regulator, a lawyer, and a financial sector specialist. I can see why they have you as a distinguished scholar. I'm just grateful that an institution like that recognizes the importance of the kind of work you've always done. It's a pleasure being in a position to talk with you. I will be a guest, as we've said, for Deep Focus this month. Please remember to like, subscribe, and make use of this program so that these kinds of in-depth discussions, daring to deal with topics like this, will become much more part of what Americans think about and learn about in an ongoing way. And if you're interested in my own work, democracyatwork.info is the website. You can learn all about it. And thank you again, and thank you, Bill Black, for a remarkable program.
Thank you.